Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bennington, Vermont. This talk, presented on Sunday, March 2, 2025, is by Bruce Learman on the topic of All Our Children.
I have two children, Liz and Ash, and I attended the birth of each of them. Midwife assisted, I might note. Though with my first, Liz, it was kind of close. I hyperventilated during the labor breathing exercises with Carol, my wife, and I had to leave for a couple of minutes and put my head between my knees. But I returned to see Liz born. Liz was premature, about 5 pounds, and had to be transferred to a downtown Philadelphia hospital for neonatal intensive care. For what felt like the longest 10 days of my life. Ash was born 3 years later, and Carol and I devoted ourselves to enjoying, guiding, and supporting our two children. When Liz was 15 and Ash was 12, Carol and I separated. In the manner of divorcing parents at the time, we did bird's nesting. Have any of you ever heard that term before? That is, the children stayed in our home, and we rotated in and out on a bi-weekly basis for a year. After the year, the kids began to make the bi-weekly move to be with one or the other of us at our new location. Because my oldest daughter had attended for 11 years in our original school district, she was allowed to complete her senior year there, even though both Carol and I had moved out of the district. Ash went to a private school through middle school and the first 2 years of high school, staying with me. The school required boarding for the last 2 years, and Ash knew she did not want to board. From middle school on, and with the support of an excellent UU sexuality education program, Ash had recognized that she was a lesbian. For her last 2 years of high school, she attended a private high school in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where Carol lived. And at that same time, Liz went off to college. The summer after Ash graduated, I brought her back east to attend college. Their stepfather, who was a college admissions counselor, had given both Liz and Ash excellent advice and guidance in selecting their colleges. Ash married when same-sex marriage became legal in Massachusetts and continued going to graduate school with her wife, Whitney, who got her Master of Divinity. Whitney had really hoped to enter the ministry and be ordained as a Methodist minister. The Methodist Church had approved women in the ministry, but had not ordained lesbians. 20 years later, that door was opened a bit, but the opportunity was passed for Whitney. My children became adults, of course. Ash and Whitney completed postgraduate education and moved to Houston to their first academic jobs. Liz worked for years with Outward Bound, guiding outdoor challenges with at-risk and adjudicated youth, and then went back to graduate school and went on to work in career development at various colleges. Ash developed an unusual endocrine problem in her 30s. And it was later discovered that she had a benign tumor on her pituitary gland that had to be removed. For another endless week, I lived in Houston to be near her during the surgery. Later in her 30s, she developed rheumatoid arthritis, which now makes it difficult to stand or walk for extended periods. Ash decided she needed to transition to a non-binary gender orientation. And with the approval and support of her doctors and her wife, began the transition, which they completed in 2022. They and them are now Ashes pronouns. Ash is now an instruction and education librarian at the University of New Jersey, at a university in New Jersey. Ash has also researched the problems encountered by students with a broad range of disabilities and how higher education addresses or fails to address their challenges. Liz is a vice provost for career development at a university in Colorado. Of course, I am proud of my children and respect what they have become. But in fact, they are not unusual. We have stories of sons and daughters, nephews and nieces, foster and adopted children to fill this room. Stories of children who succeed, who wander, who are victimized and celebrated, and some who have been lost. Everyone here could tell equally compelling and poignant stories about the children in their lives. Both Liz and Ash are on the front lines of the struggle to promote the dignity and worth of every human being. Suppose for a moment you currently have the job of advocating for accommodation and equal treatment of all students, regardless of their apparent or hidden disabilities, their ethnicity, their skin color, sexual orientation, or country of origin. Or the job of advising this year's graduating student class and its recently fired alumni on career opportunities. Help them find meaningful internships or positions in government, science, or education. My children are working on the tip of the spear. And as you use, so are we. Almost everything you read on these walls is contrary to the current administration's agenda. I, like many of my contemporaries, like many of you, grew up in the age of the consumption of machines. Throughout my lifetime, the United States has been the principal creator and consumer of all things technological: cars, refrigerators, television sets, motorcycles, lawnmowers, snowmobiles, jet skis. Many of these machines are really designed to help us to fill the empty time we have due to the availability of the other machines. A cycle of production and consumption stimulating more production and consumption. Marketeers of these machines understood that they could sell many more of them if we didn't share them. They convinced us we each needed our own machines, and another cycle began. Continued individuation. Continued isolation. Machines to create for the consumer the illusion of independence, while in fact we were becoming more dependent on denser, more accessible forms of energy, and more dependent on increased income. What I never hear from my children and rarely hear discussed anywhere is how my generation's history has created their future. Yes, there are some jokes and lots of sarcasm about us boomers, but I don't think any of those one-liners adequately capture my generation's acceptance of leisure and luxury as the highest goals of human endeavor. In the last 70 years, all the values of community, generosity, patriotism, service, even enlightenment and health have diminished relative to the pursuit of more leisure and luxury. The real question is, why have we accepted this transition? Living in leisure and luxury implies wealth, but wealth certainly doesn't imply happiness or fulfillment. There is well-documented research on the nonlinear relationship between wealth and happiness. Even among different researchers using different methods and different definitions of happiness and satisfaction, the results are surprisingly consistent. Below a certain annual income, currently about $75,000 a year in this country, wealth and happiness are positively correlated. The more you make, the happier you are. But it might be more accurate to say that below this level of income, wealth and unhappiness are negatively correlated. $75,000 a year appears to be the income at which the stresses of poverty become manageable. Just in case you're figuring it out in your head, that's about $37 an hour, plus a few benefits. Above that critical annual income, there is no measurable correlation between wealth and happiness. There is a positive happiness correlation with earned income across all income categories. Those with earned income in any given income category feel happier than those with only unearned income. One moment. Our media and marketing industries have been successful in suppressing these findings. Powerful interests are quite willing for us to see consumption as the path to happiness. I worry that my children may accept this false notion of wealth relationship to happiness, and to some extent, they have, just as I have. They have convinced me, though, that I have little to worry about for them. In general, our children have a pretty good grip on where their happiness comes from. And why have my worries about this diminished? Well, I've had conversations with my children and other observations at large. First of all, they are smart. At a Thanksgiving celebration a couple of years ago, post-COVID, Judy's granddaughter, Alyssa, then a biomed engineering student, was asked to explain at the table what was so unique about the development of mRNA vaccines. Her explanation was precise and lucid and left us grandparents generally in a glazed silence. Finally, I blurted out, "Now this is why we have children." Children are the ones who will explain the future to us. And our children are not only smart, they're wise. In the conversations with my children, it's clear they know their happiness lies far away from leisure and luxury. In this age of so much unhappiness, I asked them what they did to respond to the chaos and venality of the world we have handed them. Their answers were, keep working at what you can do. No one can do everything. Pick your level. Maybe it's national. Maybe it's local. Maybe it's personal. Whatever area you work best in, do the tasks you can do and keep doing them as well as you can. Number two, if there is something you can lead or join, do it. In any crisis, your chances of surviving are greatly increased if someone is willing to say, I will get us through this, and support or lead a group toward and a belief in a positive outcome. I find that personally I have to turn myself away from the media alarms toward the things that I do that help create order. Volunteer work, board and committee work, simple housekeeping to demonstrate that I have not lost the ability to take care of myself and to take care of each other. To paraphrase a quote attributed to George Orwell, in a global economy, scrubbing your own kitchen floor can be a revolutionary act. Helping someone else clean their kitchen floor is downright anarchy. And how you spend or don't spend your money can be revolutionary too. And what about us, all of us? Do we believe in being of service? What is our strength? What is our happiness? What is our best contribution? I wish our children no pain or suffering, no disillusionment or doubt. But of course, they will have suffering, disillusionment, and doubt. They are finding a way. They will define their successes, and they will have their successes, and they will make their mistakes as well. My hope is that they learn from our successes and mistakes. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts. For they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls. For their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you. For like goes not backward, nor tarries with yesterday. Listen to the children.